Life just got a little better, thanks to Merryman Herbs.
Welcome to Merryman Herbs. It's a better life show. Listen every Sunday, 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. on News Talk 1340 WSOY for the latest in holistic, natural, and alternative health information. Mike King will bring you up-to-date, scientifically-based health news and fun, interesting health tips, plus interviews with some of the leading doctors, scientists, and nutraceutical educators in the country. Stay on top of your health and start getting a better life. And now, here's Mike King.
Hello, this is Mike King with Merryman Herbs. It's a better life show. And again, today we have with us Dr. Zach Bush. He's triple board certified. He's from Virginia. I hope you enjoyed the last show, which was part one on the Lignite product. We are going to go into part two. Today we're going to talk a little bit more about the mechanisms, the sourcing of the ingredients. Last time we talked about his history. We talked about how he came to the discovery, his clinic, his research in, of course, cancer, the research in his clinic in nutrition and trying to figure out some keys or trying to figure out the discovery, how to help with reducing cancer and a lot of chronic disease and illness. And he came across this phenomenal idea of the bacteria and how the bacteria can produce a molecule that we need for cell signaling. And I think, Zach, you're probably going to get into great detail. So let's start off where we kind of left off last time. And we were talking about how you were trying to search for this pristine dirt or soil that had all of the phenomenal compounds in it and the, you know, how important that is with the microbiome and our bacteria and the genes and our genome. I think we've got, what, about 24,000 genes. And when we were talking about this bacteria, and then you get into the molds and the fungus, the things that make up the soil, we're actually talking about, and I've researched it. I mean, everything's from 30 million species up to, you know, and you hear 8.7 and this and that, but I think it's almost infinite as far as the genetic makeup. And then that our bodies can use. So let's get into why did you look for this? Again, you had a white paper. Why did you look for this particular soil and what were you looking for?
Thank you, Mike. Appreciate you having me on again.
My pleasure.
The overview is that, you know, we were left academia and I was running a nutrition clinic for managing chronic disease. And in that journey, we were recognizing that the healthiest foods on the planet were actually in a segment of the population, making them more inflamed, sicker than they had been without the health food.
So I need to interject real quick because, you know, and I know you've said this before, let's talk a little bit about, you said inflammation, and we know that's kind of the root cause of a lot of disease. Can you go into that a little bit? Wow, we mentioned it.
Yeah, so you're correct. Chronic inflammation is kind of the underpinnings of all of the disorders and diseases that we see going epidemic in our environment over the last 30 years. And the root cause of that ends up being an overwhelm of the immune system. The immune system, some 60 to 70% of it is in your gut lining. And that starts at your sinuses and goes all the way down through the stomach, the intestines, the colon, et cetera. So you've got this huge system of immune reactivity or front line of defense for the body, and we were recognizing that it's impossible for a population of humans or any other species to go epidemic in chronic disease in almost every organ system of the body if there's not some unifying piece of the puzzle. And so we see epidemics in childhood asthma, autism, allergies to the environment, childhood cancers, attention deficit, sleep disorders, anxiety disorders, major depression, all of this before the age of 16.
Even maybe arthritis?
Yep, absolutely. The autoimmune arthritis in children now, the juvenile rheumatoid arthritis and the like. And then by the time we're 16 and above, we're starting to move into really significant metabolic decline, insulin levels rising. Polycystic ovarian syndrome now affecting 1 in 4, 1 in 5 women in America, which makes them poorly fertile. So we've got really a collapse of our species happening at the biologic level. And then you move on past that and you get into cardiovascular disease, cancer, Alzheimer's, dementia, Parkinson's, MS, you know, all these neurodegenerative conditions along with cancers. And so, you know, how is it possible that as a single nation, we steered the entire population into this dramatic chronic disease epidemic?
Yeah. Good
and
question.
So that was kind of where I was at in 2010. I'm just asking some of those fundamental questions. There's got to be something at the root cause of the root cause of the root cause.
Right.
And so that's where you come to the chronic inflammation as being a commonality between all of these things. But then you have to ask, well, why chronic inflammation? What's the unifying factor there?
Yes.
So as we went down that puzzle, you know, the answer is, well, you better look at the gut because that's where the majority of the immune system is that's now cranking out that chronic inflammatory signaling and pathways.
Exactly.
And so the gut health, you know, has emerged over the last decade as kind of, you know, 2000-2010 was the decade of the brain. 2010 forward has been the decade of the gut. You know, we are now finding out that every single disease on the planet can be mapped back to the gut and changes in the microbiome. Importantly, the permeability of that gut membrane. And so that gut membrane is supposed to be this barrier system that keeps us protected from everything we put in our mouth.
Every
bite of food, every drink of water should be highly filtered so we only get the good stuff and we don't get any of the chemicals and bad junk in.
Well, one more thing I want to interject too, I don't think people realize, but before we start absorbing, there is a sterilization process that goes on. Of course, you know, the acid in the stomach is to digest the food, but a lot of people don't know. It also sterilizes or helps to get rid of pathogens. So, you know, when you lower that acid in the stomach, you create all kinds of other chronic disease and illnesses. It's really not a good thing to do. Of course, if you have acid reflux, Barrett's esophagus, whatever, you want to kind of get that healed up. And there's a lot of novel alternatives rather than the proton pump inhibitors. But the thing is I don't think we realize that God has created a dual purpose, the digestion and breaking down of the food in the stomach, but also the sterilization, getting rid of unwanted viruses, bacteria, and so forth. And then it hits this gut microbiome where all the good, mostly should be good guys are. And this is where you keyed in to really enhancing that. I am so excited. Tell us about this.
Yeah, so it turns out that the number one toxin on the planet right now is a chemical called glyphosate, which is Roundup.
Wow.
The active ingredient in Roundup, which is the famous weed killer.
Yes.
That went off in 2007, and now every chemical company in the world produces glyphosate in some sort of generic form of weed killer. Interestingly, that chemical has never been patented as a weed killer. It's actually been patented as, initially as an antibiotic. And
okay, wait,
antifungal and the like.
You just said it's an antibiotic. It's patented as an antibiotic. Is that what you just said?
That's correct. Glyphosate is the most powerful and most ubiquitous antibiotic on the planet right now. Kills more of the microbiome than any other chemical on earth.
Oh, no. That's all I can say. Oh, my gosh, I'm speechless. I had heard that before, but coming from you, I know it's for real. Oh, my gosh, Zach. Okay, well, I'm sitting down.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. It is an oh, my gosh.
Yes.
There's 4.5 billion pounds a year is being poured into the soils of the earth right now. And so 4.5 billion pounds of an antibiotic that's killing the soils of the earth.
And us.
And interestingly, it does that through two major mechanisms.
Okay.
Number one, it blocks an enzyme pathway called the Shikimate pathway that produces the essential amino acids, phenylalanine, tyrosine, and tryptophan are produced through this pathway. These three are, you could picture the amino acids kind of like the alphabet of the English language. So we've got 26 letters in the English language, and we can spell hundreds of thousands of words.
Right.
Same thing with proteins. We've got 26 amino acids, which are the building blocks of the alphabet of the proteins. We can build hundreds of thousands of proteins out of those 26 amino acids.
And you need all of them.
You need all of them, and the majority of them you can actually make in your own body. You don't need bacteria and fungi and plant life to do that for you. Those are the non-essential, or what we call non-essential amino acids, meaning that you can produce them on your own.
And some are semi-essential, too. You know, that means you produce some, but you still maybe need some supplementation, so... Yes.
And then the essential amino acids, which are 9 of the 26, are kind of like the vowels of the English language. And so in the vowels, if you subtract out an A and an O and a U, suddenly you misspell the vast majority of the words on the planet in English. And so kind of the same thing. If you take, so we're eliminating 3 of the critical essential amino acids out of the food chain by adding not only an antibiotic that kills all the bacteria, but prevents both the bacteria, the fungi, and the plant from producing these essential amino acids or building blocks for life. This is where we're starting to really expose the root cause of this collapse of human health is a lot of these proteins, building blocks that are now missing are essential to building the tight junction system and the extracellular matrix that keeps our gut lining intact, keeps our front line defense up. And so we start to erode that. And then it turns out that glyphosate, the same chemical that kills the bacteria, fungi, and removes the proteins from our capacity, is a direct toxin to the tight junction. So it increases permeability of that entire gut membrane. And so all of your listeners are likely 1 degree of separation from somebody, either themselves or family member or loved one, who's got seasonal allergies or food allergies or some other environmental sensitivity because the front line of defense is gone. And so now everything you breathe, every time you eat, it's going to cross through it and you're going to mount a food attack. You're going to have a food fight going on at the immune system level.
Right, then you got all the autoimmune kicking in and all kinds of horrible things, and it probably a cascading event with your body. Any allergy is get the antigen, and as you get reactive to it, it gets worse and worse and worse because you're building up those antibodies and reacting. And eventually, I guess you could get into things like cytokine storm and all that fancy tech stuff. But, you know, your body can just go crazy and attack itself. And then that's where you get into like what MS and some of these severe rheumatoid arthritis, severe autoimmune disease. So, okay, we've got a product that's out there that's everywhere. I think I heard you say it's ubiquitous, which means it's everywhere. It's causing this leaky gut. Now you have discovered a product, and I saw the science on it. There's a new published peer-reviewed article on how it helps to tighten that gut membrane. But explain a little bit of this mechanism now, and I'm just going to call it the Terohydrate product. I won't give the exact brand name or anything on it because of the Shay, and we're going to talk. I guess we could maybe say, and I'm not going to really directly say cure because we'll get into trouble, but is a phenomenal remedy for a lot of these disease states. So what is this mechanism? Okay, you know, you discovered in this pristine soil, this mechanism, this product that helps with the, I guess you could say, the communication network, the cell signaling, the redux. Explain a little bit about this mechanism now.
Yeah, so the compound that we found is a large carbon molecule. It's got rings of carbon molecules that then have lots of oxygen and hydrogen bonding capacity at one end of that molecule.
Okay.
And it was that oxygen-hydrogen bonding capacity that caught my attention back in 2012.
Right.
And led to the whole discovery of this science is that the excitement was my research had previously been in cancer chemotherapy development, and I was working with mitochondria, which look a lot like bacteria, have a viral DNA strand, and they live inside your cells. There's about 200 mitochondria for every human cell in your body.
Right, and I heard somewhere there's like 10,000 in the heart muscle cells, because it's your heart, unbelievable.
2,000 above, same in the neurons. You can find 2,000 to 3,000 in the neurons.
Right.
And so there's a lot of these mitochondria living there. And so my research had been in how these mitochondria can regulate cell life, cell repair, and cell death. And it's the loss of that signaling that leads to cancer. And so the excitement that we found in 2012 was, oh my gosh, we had been seeing for years all these articles saying that nutrition could help cancer, nutrition could reverse cancer, bacteria were important in the advent of cancer.
Right.
If you had these bacteria, you could get this cancer. If you're missing these bacteria, you can get that cancer. So we had all of these correlations going on that were new as of kind of 2006 and forward, but nobody had figured out a mechanism by which the bacteria were regulating all of this risk of cancer. And so the aha moment was, oh my gosh, I knew that if mitochondria lost their signaling and communication network, then we would get cancer.
Sure.
It followed that, wow, this molecule looks like it's capable of carrying the same redox or communication capacity. If we can figure out how to get that molecule turned back on and then get that in the human body, we may see an enormous new support system.
Wow.
And the Terohydrate family of products that we have are very unique in the supplement realm because they're not trying to do anything. They literally, our success as a biotech company has been to get that as neutral as possible.
Right.
Most of the compounds that have been pulled out of soil, shilajit, humic acid, fulvic acid, these are actually very oxidative, kind of stressful molecules on the system. They cause rusting of tissue and they damage kidney cells and stuff like this.
Okay, exactly. So you just mentioned rusting and oxidation, and again, antioxidants kind of like to give up that electron, and the electrons, you know, is what we're continually losing electrons and rusting and what we would consider aging or degradation of our body. And if we can slow that down and stop that, and we know eating these fresh fruits and vegetables and getting the antioxidants, you know, things like vitamin C or superoxide dismutase and all of these other things. But now you have found something, if we're getting the antioxidants, your body still, the gene or the cell and getting down to the mitochondria, it actually needs to communicate. And I think that's a key or a core to this whole thing is this communication. And so,
That's exactly right. And if we go back to the chronic inflammation story here, it turns out that probably my most profound, you know, realization that I've had scientifically is that the definition of chronic inflammation should really be a loss of communication.
Wow. Say that again.
The loss of communication is the equivalent of chronic inflammation. And so you cannot have a chronic inflammatory state without the complete loss of cell-cell communication.
So cell-cell communication is the core of all disease, the loss of that, basically? Because inflammation is the core of the disease, and you're saying that this you know,
information solution to the healthy body. You know,
wow.
A cell with unperturbed access to information will never become diseased. If it becomes damaged, it will simply just either go into a rapid repair state, or it will kill itself on a stem cell. And so you cannot get disease from a cell that has enough information. And so that's the phenomenal reality of, you know, this bacterial communication network is, wow, we literally deleted this communication network out of our food chain in the 1970s, 80s, and then especially in the 1990s and forward. And so what a profound thing to eliminate the fundamental ingredient in human health, which is cell-cell communication between bacteria, fungi, and the human cells. And so we've really accidentally, again, this all happened, you know, by happenstance really more than anything else. But as it unfolded, we've redefined every biologic process that we've kind of touched, because all of science up until this moment has been done in sterile petri dishes.
Yes.
And so all of our understanding on cancer, all of our understanding on cardiovascular disease, all of our understanding on autoimmune disease, all of that has been studied by myself and, you know, tens of millions of researchers around the world over the years have been working on human biology as if we were sterile.
Okay, now this is...
We do not understand human biology in the context of the ecosystem.
This is very important because, you know, if somebody would sneeze on you, you're not getting a pure virus. It's not sterile. You're going to get maybe some bacteria, mold, fungus. You're going to get all kinds of pathogens. The holistic aspect, I mean, the earth, the way everything works, the disease, the pathogens is very, very complex. It's not a sterile laboratory setting. So that's kind of an unrealistic paradigm or scientific way of looking at things. And now you're looking at it in a holistic aspect.
Yeah, I mean, I think every year my vision of what a human body is gets larger.
The reality is we
are really at one genetically, from a redox signaling standpoint, from a, you know, nutrient delivery system. We are completely integrated with the ecosystem around us, and that's why human health is failing, is we've simply slaughtered the ecosystem around us, and we've also created a lifestyle of convenience where we've separated ourselves from the last vestiges of nature. And so we live in suburban neighborhoods, and we live in these sterile homes, you know, that then get overgrowth of a few weed-like bacteria and fungi that give us an artificial ecosystem around us. And then we wear rubber-soled shoes when we walk outside, so we never touch the earth. And we jump in our cars. And I mean, it's just we're so isolated from nature.
Right. And then we take an antibiotic, which basically cleanses everything. And then you've told us about the ubiquitous antibiotic that's in everything, that's continually sterilizing everything. So I don't think people realize that we have a gut friend. That gut microbiome actually has, and I think it's almost an infinite source of genes. Now, our genes, I think, is what, 24,000 in the human genome. And a lot of that is just for signaling and for messaging. There's a lot less than what we thought as far as genes that actually do something. So it's one of these things that, you know, we want to look at that's, you know, kind of a new paradigm shift. So we've got something going on that I'm trying to get the right words for this. You might want to help me here, but we're looking at something that is, if you keep your gut friend healthy, and it has an infinite source of genes and basically the neurotransmitters, the nutrients, and the antimicrobial. And, you know, it could produce what we call bacteriocins. So if you keep your gut friend healthy, then that's the beginning of the, basically we could say the cure for all disease. Is that where we're getting at here?
Well, I actually don't believe there is such a thing as disease, so I'll take
I'll
up the ante here.
Yes, yeah, I want to hear that. You've said this before.
I don't believe there is such a thing as disease.
Okay.
That's a human construct where we come up with words like cancer and heart disease and all these different things.
And I think those are all symptoms, actually. That's my belief.
That's exactly it.
Okay,
awesome. And so there is no such thing as a real disease. There's nothing that jumps up and attacks us.
Right.
It's a very, you know, nuanced and complicated picture that would allow a disease to form. And so disease is really simply defined, I believe, as
here we go.
Health.
It's the absence or the lack of health. I love this. I love that statement. I think you're the first. I think I heard it from you first. So this is absolutely phenomenal. So disease is the lack or absence of health. So it's the lack or absence of health that causes all of these symptoms, correct?
Right.
Okay.
And so in our clinic now, we set out never to try to cure anything, because if we're trying to cure something, then we've joined allopathic medicine and the whole Western medicine machine in boiling our patient down to a symptom, which is a cancer cells or you know, a heart disease process or a diabetic or whatever, you know, label we put on it. And so if we set out to cure a disease, we're inevitably focused back on that 0.01% of the body that's having an issue.
Okay, so you're like a functional
medical,
right? So you're like a functional medical doctor that's looking for the why, not the what, like the conventional medical.
Yeah, I mean, I really respect so many of my functional medicine colleagues. I certainly would not consider myself one of them. I think that
you're beyond that.
My hope is we can actually go beyond functional medicine. I think we kind of kicked the allopathic medicine doctor off the stool, and then we got back on the same thing, and we're trying to treat symptoms again.
My friend, you are so enlightened. I just love this. Now, I've got to
we'll
be quiet. I got to be quiet and let you talk here. I think my audience is going, Mike, be quiet. We want to hear more from Dr. Bush. So, okay, we're on this new enlightened pathway of thinking about, you know, disease being basically the lack or absence of health, and we're looking at all this signaling. Continue.
Right. And so now we can, instead of saying, you know, chronic inflammation is a loss of communication and is the root cause of all disorder and disease, we can now back out of that and say, okay, well, what's the opposite? And the opposite is, if you have infinite supply to information at the cell level, you're going to support human health as it's never been supported before. And so I think we're really on the threshold of a new understanding of human biology in the context of a complex ecosystem, in the context of longevity. How long can we live as humans? We're not scratching the surface. We know these bodies are machined and engineered to do a hell of a lot more life and at a higher quality of function than we've ever done it before.
Right.
So, yeah, I'm very excited. I mean, when you stop, you know, you've mentioned genetics a couple times as far as number of genes. I want your listeners to understand how pathetically small the number 20,000 genes is. That number actually has shrunk. Initially, we thought we had 25,000 genes in the 1990s. And every time we get higher and higher resolution of these technologies that read the genome, we find out that number keeps dropping. So right now, we're kind of roughly around 20,000 genes in the human genome.
Really?
Dismally low, because a flea has 30,000 genes.
You know, this is something when they first started the genome project and so forth, they thought there was going to be maybe millions of genes, and the scientists were just
like 100,000.
Yeah, the scientists were really just amazed at how few we really have. We have just a few more than the apes. You know, we don't really have, like you just said, there's 30,000 genes in a flea. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, a fruit fly, for example, has 13,000 genes. So, you know, we're dismally simple at the genetic level.
Wow.
But that's only if you look at our genes.
Yeah.
Our DNA is massive. And so if we strung your DNA end to end, you have roughly 70 trillion human cells. Each one has about 4 to 6 feet of DNA wrapped up in it.
Wow.
And if we strung that end to end, we would wrap you, Mike, around Mother Earth 4 million times.
Oh, wow. Cover the Earth, basically. Wow,
your DNA strand is 4 million Earth circumferences long, and so that you start to put into perspective just how much genetic information is in your body. Even though there's only 20,000 genes, it's repeated 70 trillion times.
Right.
And then this amazing statistic is that all of those genes only add up to 1% of your DNA. Some 99% of your DNA has actually been historically called junk DNA. We just thought it was non-functional leftover material from maybe, you know, it's been argued that, well, it's just an evolutionary process for us to come from a one-cell organism to a multicellular organism.
Mm-hmm.
There's just a lot of junk left over. But if you look out at nature, I think it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out there's no such thing as junk or waste in nature.
Exactly.
Literally every single iota is, every dot, every speck is purposed and purposeful. And so that reality has created a couple new eras of science. The first was epigenetics, where we started to realize that the genes could be modified, the promoter regions of these genes could be modified by our environment. So the air we breathe, the food we eat, the people we hang out with, they change the way in which these genes turn on. So we now know that a single gene can make, you know, 200 or a couple thousand different proteins from a single template, depending on what the environment looks like. And that's birthed most recently this field of microRNA. MicroRNA are tiny little nucleotide sequences that are translated from the junk DNA. And so this is 99% of your genome mm-hmm. now producing microRNA. And the interesting thing about that stuff is it travels. And so messenger RNA that will go on to make a protein inside your cell will stay put inside your cell. But your microRNA from the rest of the genome, from your 99%, mm-hmm. will go into the bloodstream, will travel to distant targets within the body. And then, interestingly, our lab has got our chief science officer is John Gilday. He's one of the five experts in the world on microRNA analysis through saliva, urine, and other spaces where we secrete these microRNA into our environment and our breath and other places. And so we can literally change the genome of species around us and, you know, people within our own species by the microRNA that we extrude.
So likewise, there's a lot of communication.
Yeah. Changing you.
Wow. So there's this microRNA, which this is the first time I've really heard. I've heard a little bit, but you're really explaining it well. So there's a lot of communication going on that we don't even see or know about between each other, between our environment and exogenous outside and endogenous inside of our bodies. This is absolutely phenomenal. So this,
we already know in the microRNA environment, we've already found that some 35% of the microRNA in your bloodstream right now is not from human source. It's from bacteria, fungi, parasites, etc. And wow. So that's at the very beginning of this scientific journey on microRNA. I'm very convinced that, you know, 15, 20 years down the road, we're going to find out that 99% of the microRNA in your bloodstream is non-human. It has to be that high just by the sheer amount of genetic information around us from the microbiome. So, at any rate, it's a very exciting era where we're starting to realize that the whole environment is not just supporting, it's actually allowing and fostering human health to happen. We are a tiny smidgen of the genetic and biologic life on this planet. And if we come to terms with that, I think we're going to make much different decisions as consumers, as legislators, as
yes.
companies, when we start to realize most and foremost, we need to respect life around us at this microscopic level. And then obviously at the macroscopic level, we need to respect the animal life around us. We need to respect the human life around us.
Absolutely.
We need to stop killing things.
Zach, we're out of time. And I just want to say, so this cell signaling is kind of like a key or core to all of this. We're going to talk more about this next time. Thank you so much. This is very informative. I've been enlightened today.
I appreciate the opportunity, Mike, and everybody listening. Thank you for your time, and go forth and be healthy for the holidays.
The preceding information was not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Always seek the advice of your qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition.
Life just got a little better, thanks to Merryman Earth.